I am sorry to have to ask this, but when you see a social media influencer change their mind, my first question is always, are they getting paid?
Or did they stop getting paid?
Or did they stop getting paid?
Did Russia stop paying her?
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friend, Sarah Longwell, my esteemed colleague, Will Sommer, author of the False Flag newsletter, sitting in for Tim Miller, who's on vacation. We have a show packed with wonders and delights, and believe me, Laura Loomer is the best part of it. We're going to start with her. I'm not even going to make you wait. Normally, I would tease and make you wait for the good stuff. Not today. Laura Loomer is maybe the biggest grown-up left in MAGA at this point. I'm Ron Burgundy. We're going to begin with Laura. Laura has some things she wanted to get off her chest this week. Here's a headline from the Kyiv Post. Pro-Trump influencer Laura Loomer visits Ukraine, changes tone on Russia. She had a long Twitter post about this, and she says that she was, I'll just read to it. I was living in a media echo chamber, and I was propagandized by Russian media on social media to believe those things. So I came to Ukraine to see the country for myself, blah, 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 blah. On day one, I've already seen photos of dead priests in Bucha murdered by Russia, and I saw the mass grave where the bodies of murdered Christians were placed after Russia sent forces from Chechnya to massacre innocent people. Da, 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 da. Who are the Nazis? She has an emoji there. I was lied to for years. I realized Ukraine and Zelensky aren't the jihadi apologists, but Russia and Putin are. I was wrong. I have a responsibility to correct the record. No lies detected?
In this narrow frame right here. But yes, good, good. Like I've always said, I think it is good when people apologize. I think it is good when people change their positions, when they are given new information. I don't know that we require a wholesale reevaluation of Laura Loomer in light of this information, but maybe Will Sommer has a different opinion.
Well, look, I mean, I've spent many years of my life pondering what goes on in Laura Loomer's brain, you know, her motivations. About a few weeks ago, she had traditionally for the past several years been very like anti-Ukraine, anti-Zelensky, you know, all the kind of classic, you know, MAGA talking points, you know, Zelensky's living high on the hog, all these various allegations. And then a few weeks ago, she suddenly was like, wait a minute. I mean, she'd even written for RT, all this stuff. Suddenly she said, I've been brainwashed. I'm giving it all up. Now she's very like Slava Ukraini. This is very like 2022. She went to so now she's in Ukraine. And she went to a McDonald's that was like hit by Russian drones. And she said, you know, this being, you know, the right way, a lot of focus on women's appearance. She said, I don't normally order fast food, but for this, I will order, you know, a Big Mac and a Diet Coke. You know, Ukraine is part of the West, all of this stuff. So it's been a real about face.
Well, I am sorry to have to ask this, but when you see a social media influencer change their mind, my first question is always, are they getting paid?
Yes.
Or did they stop getting paid?
Or did they stop getting paid? Maybe not. And maybe this is totally unfair to Laura Loomer. I don't know. But, you know, it does seem like what we've heard from our friend Ashley Sinclair and all sorts of people that there is a lot of payola in the world of like MAGA Twitter. Yes.
Well, and to Sarah's point, I mean, the head of RT tweeted, well, 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 I see Laura has switched sides. Yes. So I think in her case in particular, I would not rule it out. She has, you know, as I've documented in False Flag, she's taken a lot of kind of weird policy angles. Politico had a story about how she was like up in the muck in these various kind of schemes regarding like Venezuelan oil exports. She claims she hasn't been paid. You know, I think probably, you know, the evidence suggests she has. In this case, I can't rule out any payments. She has also really been embraced by the Ukrainian government. Zelensky's office said, you know, it's very important that we welcome Laura. On the other hand, I think there's maybe a more personal motivation here. I mean, for Laura, I think there's two things that are really most important in the world. Israel and his kind of slavish devotion to Donald Trump. And I think number one, she's seen Trump really become more hawkish on Ukraine, saying they can manufacture Patriot missiles, all these things. And also she recognizes that her greatest enemies opposing Israel, people like Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson, they are also aligned with Russia. They're visiting Russia, speaking very positively about Putin. So I think that's also what's driving her.
Can I just second that? That was my take also, is that Laura Loomer is trying—
Oh, it's all about Israel?
No, it's about Tucker. I think she is trying to position herself very much as the anti-Tucker. And so if Tucker is anti-Israel and pro-Russia, I think Loomer's move is to be pro-Israel, anti-Russia. Now, she comes by the Israel stuff, I think, honestly. But I think the about face has a little bit to do with wanting to. And also Tucker and Candace, you may like, they are now on the outs of Trump's inner circle. And so this is a good way, I think, for her to continue to position herself as relational to Trump, but also because that is where Laura Loomer does make her money. Laura Loomer does have more information than often reporters and other people, because she does have, Trump takes her on trips sometimes. And the only thing I'll say is that to the extent that there's America First and MAGA establishment, the one thing I can't puzzle out, Will, is there's no home for her in the MAGA establishment. Like, she's still Laura Loomer. So she's not, it's not like Marco Rubio is suddenly like, Laura, what have you, you know, come be part of our, or Mike Johnson. And maybe not. Maybe they will, just because Trump talks to her. But she seems to be carving out sort of an odd space. But I do think it is maybe just like, I am in proximity to Trump, and therefore that is enough.
Yeah. I mean, look, she is in this position, as you said, where, you know, she's kind of alienated herself from a lot, from like the Grapers. I mean, she used to be tight with Nick Fuentes, not anymore. People like Tucker, Candace. On the other hand, as you said, she really doesn't have, it's not as though the GOP establishment is going to welcome her in. So her deal for a long time really has been, she has a connection to Trump and that's it. And she has that because she is like his number one diehard fan who will never go against him. And so, you know, whether it was Trump wanted to hire her for the campaign in 2024, and then Susie Wiles or Marjorie Taylor Greene were like, no, you can't do that. That's why she sued Bill Maher for saying she was having an affair with Trump, precisely because that got her kicked off the plane. So, you know, she'll do anything to stay on Trump's good side. And as he, you know, gets back on board with Ukraine and Zelensky, I think that may explain also what's going on here.
I have a question for both of you, and maybe neither of you can answer it. Is there a constituency for Laura Loomer? Like, I understand that there is an elite constituency among like other influencers who pay attention to her because she is a figure somehow. That's the thing that's gotten. But I don't know, like if you're drawing up like actual people in MAGA world, people who vote for Donald Trump or are very online or what, like, because it seems like, I don't know, like there ain't a whole lot of popular support for what she's selling, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think there is, weirdly enough. I think you're right. I don't think there's.
But she doesn't have a podcast where you can point to, she gets 10 million viewers a week.
Yeah. Right? So she has a podcast because that's famously, she ate dog food to promote one of her sponsors. Right. So she does have a podcast. It's definitely not like Candace Owens or Tucker level. But I think, you know, when she ran for Congress, I was talking to some Laura Loomer super fans. And I think she appeals to a certain, like particularly woman, who kind of like, they like her. She's brassy. You know, I mean, often I think they're Jewish themselves. So she's just like kind of a much more mainline Trumpian, you know, like she's the ultimate Trump fighter. And I think there is an audience that likes that.
Sarah, have you ever had somebody in a focus group who is like, boy, that Laura Loomer, I like that girl.
You know, she's aces. It's true. She does not come up the way Tucker and Candace do. Like she is not, she is very terminally online. And I think she is considered more in terminally online spaces than in mainstream ones. And this is why when I write a piece about Candace Owens, I'm like, this has gone mainstream, guys. Like she comes up both sides of the aisle from people. She is being listened to unironically by lots of people, but also as a matter of entertainment. That's not true of Laura Loomer. I do think that Will is right, though, that like, and this is the part of our media fragmentation, is you can imagine the Laura Loomer listener who is maybe like from South Florida, likes a good party in a tight dress, but loves like the flash and the glitz, the tackiness of MAGA world, but also loves that she throws punches, loves that she's like, they're not trad wives. They're a different breed of something that's more like, boy, I don't quite know how to describe this.
Maybe like Ann Coulter?
Yeah, but it's like a new wave Ann Coulter thing. Yeah, Ann Coulter's a good corollary from a different era.
At least Ann Coulter could sell books. You know, that's what I'm getting at. Like,
But that's because that's from an era when people read, right? Like we're no longer in an era where people read. We're in an era where people follow people on Twitter. And I think Laura Loomer, she knows how to beef, man. And I think that so did Ann Coulter.
So I would like to, I don't want anybody to get the idea that I am anti-Loomer, because I'm not. I'm here to make the case to the two of you. You guys can tell me if I'm wrong. That Laura Loomer is one of the grown-ups, and as evidence, Exhibit A, when our buddy Tim Miller was at a TPUSA after party in 2024, a impaired Carrie Lake came up and started just screaming at him, and like it became like a whole thing. There were stories written about this and whatnot, and the voice of reason in this story was Laura Loomer, who came over to Carrie Lake like an adult and said, "Yeah, okay, sure. No, we don't like Tim. What are you doing? Come on, let's go. Let's go."
Okay.
And broke the whole thing up.
No.
A thing that happened.
Yeah, I know it is. I know it is. But there's a difference between.
Hold on. I'm not done. That's only Exhibit A, Sarah. Exhibit B. When the Qataris handed Donald Trump a gigantic airplane and said, "Here, use this thing for your Air Force One," Laura Loomer said, "No, don't do that. That's a bad idea. Why are you doing that?"
Because it's self-evidently a bad idea.
Exhibit C, when Donald Trump nominated Casey Means, the crazy lady, to be Surgeon General of these United States, Laura Loomer said, "This is ridiculous. Don't do this." Laura Loomer is anti-Candace. Candace Owens, super popular. Megyn Kelly is trying to not beef with Candace. Laura Loomer is all in on that. I'm just saying, like, I don't know. She's above the median for normal somehow in Trump, too.
If I could interject there, I mean, I think, you know, number one, we have to mention her insane hatred of Muslims, right? I mean, that you know, you know, obviously that's not good. You know, I think you're often making the correct point. In the case of the Qatar plane, she did back off of it when Trump was like, "I don't think you get it. I really want this nice plane." And then also, I mean, there is she often seems to have an ulterior motive, like the Casey Means thing. You know, there were a lot of accusations from the MAHA people that she was like in the pay of Big Pharma somehow. It was a weird one. You know, she was saying Casey Means is doing witchcraft, all this. So often the criticism, I don't think maybe the motivation not we would agree with, but I think directionally sometimes she is right. And certainly in the world of like MAGA personalities, probably more right than many.
Okay, but hold on. Can we just to put JVL in the context of, I view Laura Loomer much like I view Marjorie Taylor Greene and her.
That's what I was waiting for you to bring up.
Yes, yes.
Because this is the big problem, right? How can it be that the two consciences of MAGA in the year of our Lord 2026 hate each other? Because Laura Loomer and MTG have a blood feud.
Because Will, they're not serious.
Do you remember
people.
What it was that Laura Loomer said about Marjorie Taylor Greene sandwiches? Do you recall that?
Yes, it was put in sworn court testimony in a deposition. Yes, this is in the Bill Maher lawsuit. And she said, because she was essentially, the opposing counsel was making the point, well, can't you sometimes speak figuratively about someone sort of a funny way without it being true? And they said, "You said Marjorie Taylor Greene has Arby's in her pants. What did you mean by this?" And of course, she's saying Marjorie Taylor Greene is promiscuous. It's the implication that it's roast beef. And so instead, Laura said, "Well, it was my understanding that she likes to put sandwiches in her pants." And so, you know, she stuck
to
by
my best knowledge and belief.
That was a factual
Marjorie
claim.
Taylor Greene likes to take sandwiches from Arby's and put them into her pants. That's what I meant by that.
Yeah, I think JVL, I think this can be answered in the broken clock, right, twice a day vein of these people, where I do think, to Will's point, you should judge them by the totality of their works. And the totality of their works are quite awful. Just because they are correct here or there doesn't make them. And the fact that they hate each other, I think, is again, because this is much more about proximity and influence, proximity to Trump, influence over the Republican Party, than it is about having like a position they care about.
So I have to concede, of course you're right. Of course you're right.
Okay, I appreciate your commitment to the bit.
But no, it's not a bit. It's what I'm trying to do is sort of a Jonathan Swift style satire here to underscore the point that what is the difference really between Laura Loomer and Mick Mulvaney, or Laura Loomer and J.D. Vance, or Laura Loomer and Kevin, you know, my Kevin, all of the supposed grownups, right? Lutnick, like all these people who are supposed to be the grownups as opposed to the crazies. Is there really a difference? Like, aren't the crazies actually like sometimes just more moral and more grown up, or just as much as they are? And that's what I'm trying to get across. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you think that my Kevin is ultimately better than Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I don't. Yeah. I don't. And actually, you're making an, if we spent more time on this and I thought about it hard, I could probably come up with something about how these sort of more crazy influencers, part of the service that they provide to the Republican Party is sort of dragging our attention over to how insane they are, which sort of keeps us from just grappling with the true players. And how each one of them is disqualified. Because, I mean, the people surrounding Trump that are Jason Miller or Howard Lutnick, who lied to us about his Epstein affairs? Marco Rubio, who has decided to just abdicate on Iran and like decided not to get involved so J.D. Vance could take J.D. Vance himself, the dogs and cats, like these are all they are all Laura Loomers, every single one of them.
But they wear the suit of respectability. All right. We're going to move on. First, we have to have a word from our sponsor, though, Sarah. A sponsor who I have a lot of curiosity about.
Well, this show is sponsored by Soul Gummies. And by this show, I mean The Next Level is sponsored by Soul Gummies. They say balance is the key to life. Well, I got to say, Soul nailed that with their new Mood Gummies. If I need a pick-me-up, a wind-me-down, or something in between, they've got perfectly balanced formulas designed to keep me level. And these are perfect because, JVL, we haven't been talking as much lately. You've been out. I don't know if we've talked about the seriousness with which I am committed to my fitness journey. Okay? I'm in the gym. You know who sees me in the gym? You know who we see? Will Sommer and I see each other in the gym.
Wow.
We can't really talk about it too much publicly because both of us are in our, workout skivvies. Do you know though, Will Sommer drinks coffee while he works out? He has like a coffee cup
filled with creatine.
Yes. Well, I'm new to creatine. Yes.
His muscles are big, but I'm also trying to get. I'm a 46 year old woman in the process of trying to make sure that my bone density and other things hold up for the long term. So I'm on a fitness journey. And so I've had to cut back on how much I'm drinking. And so the Soul Gummies have become my go-to for how I relax. Soul is a wellness brand that makes delicious hemp-derived CBD and THC products designed to make feeling good simple. Soul's new Mood Gummies have precise dosing, clean ingredients, and formulations designed for predictable effects so you can choose how you want to feel while staying in control. And this is the best part here. If you're looking for a bright, social, and energizing buzz, go with Uplift Gummies, which is 3 milligrams of sativa THC and CBG, perfect for daytime plans or beating the afternoon slump. When it's time to wind down, the Mellow Gummies deliver 3 milligrams of indica THC plus CBN, ideal for cozy nights and fully unplugging. What I like about this, talking about 3 milligrams, guys, nice and low. Even JVL could handle this, okay? We are not talking about everybody getting blown out. This is just like a little bit of chill. It's like having a cocktail in the evening, energizing something in the morning. Make today a good day and get yourself some Soul Gummies. Right now, Soul is offering my audience 30% off your entire order. Go to getsoul.com and use the code THENEXTLEVEL. Don't forget the next level. That's getsoul.com, promo code THENEXTLEVEL for 30% off.
On your fitness journey, have you considered getting a Peloton?
Oh, yeah, my Peloton sitting there with clothes on it. Yeah. That's not part of my fitness journey anymore.
Same. New subscribers may not remember that early in this thing on The Secret Show, I badgered Sarah to get a Peloton so that we could work out together. And we both got Pelotons. And I don't know, 6 months later.
And what happened?
Our Pelotons were collecting laundry.
Yeah, that's right. Great. One of many things JVL has forced me to buy that we don't use.
I mean, a lot of things I buy for you.
It's true. They just show up at the house.
So we've got a war going on. This is the other major war happening to our east. The war in Iran is back on. We this weekend had a number of American service members killed. The Department of Defense does not seem to be transparent about what is happening to members of the armed services. Totally normal, I guess. Now we have the Iranians blowing up. They claim that they hit an Amazon data center in Bahrain, and the price of gas is back over $4 a gallon nationally. I just have a global question. Does any of this matter? Because I have this sinking feeling that we're just hunkering down into a world of Groundhog Day where the Iran war becomes background noise and people won't even really have a clear sense of what the price of gas is. They'll be like, well, it's up a little. Oh, it's down a little. It's, you know, who can say anymore? And Trump gets away with it all.
Well, you say global, and I'm going to, it matters a lot to other people around the globe. I mean, part of what is striking to me about the Iran war now is how much it is like pulling in Kuwait and Jordan and the Houthis and Bahrain. And like he's further destabilizing the Middle East and creating sort of new problems. And the fighting is spreading beyond. I mean, sometimes I was trying to explain to my kids last night about being at war. And I had to be like, so this is happening, but you guys have to recognize how lucky we are in some sense that it doesn't touch us, but it is touching all kinds of people across the globe. It's so easy for Americans to be like, well, war on, war off. But it can escalate now for all kinds of reasons that don't even have to do with us, right? They're all bombing each other now or getting into it. But I'm going to bring up one more analogy and you can tell me if this is stupid or not. But when I was watching soccer, I got into the World Cup and I watched all the games, and it was fun to sort of, as somebody who doesn't really watch a lot of soccer except when the Women's World Cup team is playing, and I've got tickets to the Spirit here in DC, but like watching a bunch of different teams, you see that they have this way in the beginning of matches often of like feeling each other out. They kind of go tit for tat and everybody plays more defense than offense because, you know, everyone's trying to get a feel for the rhythms. And right now, it feels like we're in that rhythm. But then at some point, everybody says, now we got to start playing. And they like kick into gear and they start attacking hard because at some point, someone's got to win. And I feel like that at some point we do this 10 days of bombing, they start bombing other people. Everybody sort of sees what proportional response looks like, how much does it, but at some point it either everyone decides to de-escalate or there's no choice but to ramp up. And I could very easily see it going either way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously Sarah would know better than I do about how voters react to the gas prices. But I think, I mean, look, she mentioned the Houthis. The Houthis now are going to start attacking the Saudi oil infrastructure. I mean, if we look at it domestically, I think, you know, the gas prices are going to stay high. I think voters remember that. And I think maybe most importantly from my perspective, I think we can see that kind of Republican power players and media figures were saying, you know, when Trump was laying down the MOU, they were saying, we got to wrap this up, man. I don't care how much you give to Iran. The midterms are coming up and we need to call this war off because we need to get the gas prices down. And so I think now that the war seems to be flaring up again, getting back on, I think, you know, yeah, I think that is a problem for Republicans.
So I wrote about this today, Sarah. I don't know if you had a chance to read it or not. Oh, look at that. Look who got caught not having done the reading.
Not yet. I'll get to it. What'd you say?
So what I was trying to tease out was this mystery of why Trump hasn't just left, right? He got his memorandum of understanding. He could have left, right? And I mean, some of the comments are like, you know, Iran wouldn't let him. No, that's not the case. If Donald Trump wanted to just pull all of the forces that he had moved in theater and run up to the war, out of the war, gone back and basically said, well, Strait's yours. You guys figure, you know, then Iran can't pull anybody into anything, right? Iran will make its own deals with everybody else. Iran controls the Strait. The rest of the world moves on. Now, that would be very, very bad and irresponsible of America to do, but no more bad and irresponsible than starting this stupid fucking war in the first place. And what I said is that Trump has these two maxims that he holds to. And the first is you always move forward, right? You just, if things get bad, you just create another shit show to distract people with. And you just start a new storyline and make yourself the star of this next storyline too. Don't get bogged down. But the other one is like dominate, 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 never admit defeat. And I think the problem is that he's just psychologically is caught like, the idea of walking away and totally having lost, it's just like it's unthinkable to him. And what he should do is just walk. I mean, just by his own lights and his own political lights. That would be the best thing to do if he cared about like the future political / electoral success of Donald Trump. But he doesn't have it in him.
What if it's even stupider than that?
Always possible.
Probably is, yeah.
Where Donald Trump sometimes, in matters where he like doesn't really know what he's doing, right? He's easily influenced by the last person he talked to. And I think that part of the reason you get the vicissitudes of war on, war off, is that you get like at some time he's talking to like the generals who are telling him, like, we've got to finish this job because now they control the streets. So we've got to go bomb them and we can bomb them effectively or whatever. And there are people in his orbit who are, you know, Mark Thiessen or whatever at the Wall Street or Washington Post, you know, who are urging him in that direction. And the, if they say to him, sir, you're a laughingstock, Obama would never have done this deal. They're going to say you did a deal worse than Obama. And in that moment, he's like, tell them to go do the war. And then gas prices shoot up and he starts getting tons of calls from, you know, Republicans in Congress saying, you got to stop this war because the gas prices are going to kill us. We're going to lose this election. And then there's going to be oversight on you, sir. You don't want that. And then he's like, stop the war. Everybody say there's a deal. Or, you know, like, I'm not sure we're dealing with somebody who it's not like we've got somebody with a plan here.
I think there's a lot to that. I mean, you know, add in Bibi Netanyahu, add in the Gulf countries and whatever weird financial arrangements the Trump family has with them. And so I you can imagine that, you know, there's just so many competing interests telling Trump what to do that he's kind of in this bind.
I understand what you're saying about the people being the laughingstock and the last thing people say to him being, and I think that's probably the right answer. But at the same time, I look at this and I think, yes, he would be a laughingstock. Everybody would say, well, what about Obama? But he just wait a week and then invade Cuba, right? I mean, he could just press forward with this the way he does with everything else.
I know, but it kind of seems like they have that plan in their back pocket too.
Yeah, so we'll just do it now, right? I mean, it's like, yeah, we're out. Laugh at me first, and then I'll say I was the one who liberated Cuba.
Maybe, except American service members are dying now. I mean, this gets hard, right? These are the moments when people in your ear start to say, well, you can't just let them kill American service members without coming back at them hard. Like, this is how things escalate.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. All right, time for a word from our next sponsor. This show is sponsored by Bowl and Branch. It's summertime here in the Big Apple. And I want to just sort of speak some real talk. So when we get our advertisers, the nice people at Bowl and Branch send us stuff to use, which is great. I'm very grateful for it. I'm so devoted to this product, and I'm an actual real evangelist for Bowl and Branch, even not on podcast ads. Like, I'll just talk about this with my friends. Like, are you sleeping on Bowl and Branch at home? And they're like, this isn't a show. I'm like, I know it's not, but I want to make your life better. And so we had a period of a couple months here where actually people know we had some drama in my family and sleeping arrangements were all messed up. And I was actually sleeping in one of the kids' rooms on a twin size bed, which did not have Bowl and Branch sheets. I did one night on this thing without Bowl and Branch sheets. And I came, I was like, nope, 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 this isn't going to work. So I went to Bowl and Branch with my very own money and bought their signature sheets and bought one of their twin sized waffle blankets for my own self with my own money, because I couldn't sleep without it. And once I had it, I slept better. I slept cooler. I was more comfortable. It was more relaxing. You spend like between 5 and 8 hours a night, a day sleeping. You want to treat yourself to this stuff. When you amortize it out, it is such a bargain. So this is my genuine plea to people. Treat yourselves well. Get yourselves Bowl and Branch stuff. It's fantastic. Their sheets are 100% organic cotton, woven specifically for airflow, not just softness. 94% of Bowl and Branch customers say their sheets get softer with every wash. I will just tell you that that's true. They do get softer with every wash. Sleep cooler this summer with Bowl and Branch. Get 15% off your first order, plus free shipping at bowlandbranch.com/next level with code next level. That's Bowl and Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com/next level, code next level to unlock 15% off. bowlandbranch.com/next level, code next level, exclusions apply. So we got some hot primary talk for today, and I'm gonna swerve, do a little heel turn for you guys in wrestling parlance. But first, we have to go to the James Fishback race and a 501c4 ad put up by allies of Ted Cruz attempting to combat anti-Semitism in the Republican. I'm sorry. We just have to watch it to be able to talk about it.
Is this really what you want your Republican Party to look like? It's time to act before normal people are shut out of the GOP forever.
Frontline Action is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Everyone's having a normal one.
Chopping up the cake with a big scimitar. Yeah.
I mean, at the first layer, is the idea that Fishback and the other dude are a gay couple, is that supposed to be subtext as part of this? Am I reading my own headcanon into it?
Yeah. your ship. So that's Dan Bilzerian. I think you're probably right that there's this idea that they're this gay couple and they're inviting people like the Ayatollahs. They're inviting Putin and his generals over.
And the squad. Yeah. So Rashid Tlaib and also terrorists.
We had terrorists, but Code Pink. And then Candace and Tucker.
And Tucker too. Yeah. I mean, I don't even quite know what to say. And so I'll start with you, Sarah. Are we in favor of this because we think, well, at least Ted Cruz is saying something now? Or do we think, you know what? I'm going to love watching lepers eat this fucker's face.
Yeah, we can take a little of column A, a little from column B on this one. I think I want to start with the AI of it all, which I do think if we just go back a couple of years, like this is sort of an unimaginable ad, but Republicans really are leaning into AI as a creation tool, which is how you can. The fact is, the squad probably isn't going to go over to the house of Dan Bilzerian, but you can make it thus. Now, to prove your weird horseshoe point that you want to make if you're Ted Cruz, look, I think the fact that Ted Cruz isn't doing the sort of Scott Jennings, anti-Semitism only exists on the left shtick is good. No, it's straightforwardly good.
It's good.
And what he, although, you know, the way that Republicans do this stuff is always, this is like a key move from like both anti-antis and old Republicans and conservatives where they're like, you don't want to be like the left. Like they couldn't just say Fishback, this absolutely anti-Semitic forward. And this isn't coded. This isn't like, this guy is an anti-Semite. He is a racist. It is how he's running. It is the campaign that he is running straightforwardly. And so Ted Cruz is basically saying, this guy shouldn't be welcome in the Republican Party. Okay. True, shouldn't be welcome by any party anywhere. But also to make him bad, he tosses in a bunch of, you know, scary guys in, you know, head dresses or not head. What would it be like?
Turbans? You know?
Yeah, I guess. Is that the technical name of what? But like he throws in the Ayatollahs. He throws in the squad. Can't just say, hey, we should probably not elect this super anti-Semitic guy. So, you know, a little of both.
Yeah, I think, look, the Fishback race, he's polling at about 10% according to a Tony Fabrizio poll out today. So, you know, pretty, you know, a lot more than you would like to see for like a total charlatan. The other Fishback news is he's facing a lawsuit from another candidate relating to his residency. The candidate's arguing he doesn't meet the qualifications to run because he hasn't lived in Florida long enough. To give you an idea of the twists and turns in this race, to defend his case that he's a Florida resident, James Fishback has introduced a prior lawsuit against him for allegedly having sex with an underage high school student. So that's on the pro Fishback side now that he's adding that as evidence. So, I mean, it's a messy, messy race. And yeah, I mean, I think to Ted Cruz's credit, I guess, you know, he's waiting in here.
Okay. Well, I guess the good news is Fishback won't win his race.
Yeah. But you know what? I think it's concerning that a guy who is such a like comical charlatan who has about like five different scandals, you know, he's like $2 million in debt, all this stuff, that he's able to, you know, get close to 10%.
You know what? I'll take the other side of that. I think that he's only at 10%. I would not have guessed that. If you had sort of just drawn this picture to me 6 months ago and said, where do you think this guy will pull? I would have gone with like 30. And so I think this is a good sign. This is good on Republican voters in Florida. Look at me giving them credit where they're due, Sarah.
Yeah, I would say on the negative side, because no longer, like, in this race, and there's a lot of places like this, and I hope we're going to talk about some actual real Senate races in a second, which is, you know, like Michigan.
In a moment, in good time.
But a lot of these races get run through a national prism now. And so Fishback has found himself a real national audience on the Groyper right that can sort of flirt with the Nick Fuentes side, that can flirt with what was once the Loomers. Like, there's a hornet's nest of degeneracy that is a cesspool all wrapped together that is bigger. Like, you can only find 10% of them in any given race when they actually run for something. But they make up a not insignificant.
They might be 10% nationally. And that's a problem.
Right. That's right. Like 10%.
30 million people in this country. Whew, that's quick math. 33 million people.
Right. And this is my whole life right now, and has been for many years, is trying to sort of cleave off both, like, the good news is always, okay, they don't have enough votes to, like, win an election. The bad news is it's not 0.5%. Like, it's a meaningful number of people when you look at it.
I mean, if Tim were here, this would be funny. But this is because it's just Catholic humor that I will, neither of you will get this, but somebody in the who's Catholic in the audience will get this. I was in line for confession last week, and this, like, young 20s kid comes in and gets in line behind me, and he's wearing a Groyper t-shirt. I thought, this guy misunderstands one of these two commitments.
Yes.
I don't know if he misunderstands what the Groypers are, or if he misunderstands what the Catholic Church is, but he's not super clear on both. Okay. So now we move on to South Kakalaki, where we have a new senator, Darlene with an I, Graham, who, because of her excellent qualifications, has been named as a sitting senator for these United States by Donald Trump. She announced yesterday, I think, that she's decided to seek full election for the seat. The primary is, when is that? August 11th. So there will be less than one full month from the death of the senator to the primary to choose the party's next senator. That's great. Here's where I'm going to swerve. I think Darlene Graham is probably the best option.
What do you mean by that? Do you mean she's the best option from, like, our perspective than one of the sort of more entrenched guys that would pop up here?
Let me paint a picture, and the two of you can tell me where I'm wrong. So Darlene Graham has had no public life before this moment. What she has done is basically done social work for her whole professional career. She has worked for adults with disabilities, specifically blind people in the state of South Carolina. That seems like pretty good foundation for understanding at least the idea of public service. And she is running against, because she has two primary challengers, she's running against Congressman Ralph Norman. Now, you may remember him from the insurrection. He's the guy who texted Mark Meadows in the run-up to the insurrection and demanded that the president invoke martial, MARSHALL, law. Do you guys remember that? That's him. Mm-hmm. And the other guy is Russell Fry, who was elected to Congress in 2022 as retribution against Tom Rice, who voted to impeach Trump. And so he is a guy who is a cat's paw of Trump, who came in specifically to go after somebody who had voted to impeach the guy. And so when you have a guy who is in favor of a coup, another guy who was elected to get retribution for people who did the coup, and then this woman who spent her adult life doing public service, like, I don't know, I'll take Darlene Graham.
I think that's a reasonable way to look at it. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's obviously, I think, a lot of MAGA grassroots anger over it. Look, they didn't love Lindsey Graham. Now they're putting in, Trump is endorsing her sister, putting her in. I think there's a question about whether she's even eligible to run.
There is a question about that.
The South Carolina GOP, there's, like, some internal drama over closing primaries and Democrats switching parties. So they put in this rule saying that, you know, you have to have voted in 2 out of 3 of the last, of the most recent primaries. She voted in one primary in a runoff. So, you know, I think there's going to be a real challenge to to her.
Can I say there's another angle to this that to me is more interesting? Because I don't know her from Adam. Like, maybe, but you're kind of rolling the
dice. I don't either, but she didn't ask the president to invoke martial law and prevent the peaceful transfer of power.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. She's also related to Lindsey Graham.
Low bar, so, Sarah.
Like, she's also related to Lindsey Graham. So, like, we'll see. We'll see about that. To me, what is interesting is Trump's endorsement and how much juice it continues to carry in a world. And this started to happen in 2022, but I think has taken on much is now as Trump is more even more lame duck because then it still seemed like he could have a political future. And of course, now he does. But like when every candidate in the race is a diehard MAGA type, right, and has been like full-throatedly ready to overturn every election at Trump's behest, does Trump the person's full-on endorsement matter the way that it used to? I think the answer might be no, that like I think she might actually do quite poorly, maybe for the reason that you're even saying, which is for people like us, we're like, well, maybe the devil you don't know is better than this real devil you do. And so that alone could make her do not as well.
I would say that when you look at some of the places his endorsements haven't worked yet, they've been at state-specific offices. So they've been, for instance, he wasn't able to unseat Brian Kemp when he tried to go after Brian Kemp. He wasn't able to get his person for governor of Georgia over the line. He wasn't able to get his person for governor of South Carolina this cycle over the line. And so there may be like a difference between people evaluating state level offices versus sending people to Congress, right? Because at Congress, there's a little bit more of a direct like, oh yeah, MAGA matters to me, you know, and Trump matters, but maybe not. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
I don't know. There was the Iowa race where the kind of MAHA guy beat out Randy Feenstra, who had Trump's endorsement. Yeah. Like we've started to see a couple of these where Trump's endorsement doesn't pull someone over the finish line the way it did in 2022 or even there. But like, just remember, J.D. Vance is only vice president because he became a senator of Ohio because Trump plucked him out of that crowded field and said, fine, I'll take that guy, and just like dragged him just enough over, which demonstrated Trump's power. And I'm not sure he's got like that level of juice now.
Also, Peter Thiel's money.
I was just going to say, I think this is headed towards Trump like pulling the endorsement or endorsing everyone in the race. One of these things where he's like, you know what? Sorry, Darlene, I can't stick with you anymore.
Yeah, very possible. Although, you know, the weird thing is, because it's so fast, we probably won't even get any reliable polling. So Trump won't be able to have the benefit of understanding which way the wind is blowing.
Pretty sure he can get a poll in the field.
You can, but like, you know, you could get a poll or two, but these things are always most reliable when you have a bunch of polls and you can, you know, average them out. Okay, so the big one is Michigan, where we have Abdul El-Sayed versus Haley Stevens. And I'm going to need you to explain this to me like I'm a golden retriever, because we have some video of Haley Stevens that I'd like to play and then discuss.
I am going to be working on our behalf. I am going to be telling the stories on our behalf. And you better believe I'm going to be doing it with a little bit of joy, a little bit of enthusiasm, a little bit of energy, and a little bit of stick it to them. Because that's the Michigan way.
So, Sarah, I want to admit that I frequently have a blind spot for a certain type of charisma. For instance, when I was a young child watching professional wrestling, I never understood why people liked Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream. Like, I would watch this guy blathering with his lisp, and he was fat, and he had like a receding hairline, bleached blonde hair. And I was like, why do people root for this guy? He's weird. I didn't get the appeal. Maybe that's what's happening with Haley Stevens. I don't like, but I look at that woman and I think, how could she get 24 people to vote for her?
Yeah. I mean, that clip has gone around quite widely as to be mocked among sort of the political set as cringe. And I think it plays in Michigan.
It might. Well, this is what I'm saying. Like, I may just not understand this.
So there's a couple things. One, have you ever met Gretchen Whitmer or really listened to her talk?
I've listened to her talk and I felt the same thing. I did not understand why people thought she was a major political talent.
Yeah. So she sounds.
You and I have had this fight a lot.
We have.
Right?
It is jarring. I found it when Gretchen Whitmer and I were like talking in real life. I was like sort of taken aback by how thick her accent is, which comes out much more when you're just chatting than even when she's giving a speech or something much more sort of structured. And that kind of stuff actually matters. It sounds like Michigan to Michiganders. I also think that we have decided that anybody that is kind of like, I've done the work and I'm a striver and I'm try hard, that is cringe. Like people on the internet have decided that is cringe. I think that people who are looking for actual results locally don't think it's cringe. They kind of like the idea of somebody who is a workhorse for their values. And I think that they actually find Abdul El-Sayed's sort of nationalized stardom to be off-putting, which is something that happens in local races all the time, where the person getting a lot of national attention, the local people kind of turn and say, this is actually not that dissimilar from the Graham Plattner stuff, right? I actually think Graham Plattner was helped by the sort of national backlash against him because Mainers were like, you're not going to make this decision for us. And so, yeah, I don't know if you've seen other interviews with her, but I do think we also have a tendency for people to take one clip and decide that is the whole of a person. Like that is now, and her opponents have tried very hard to make her cringe, to make it seem like she is super lame. But like people don't feel that way in Michigan now. And I'll tell you, we just did a focus group in Michigan. I would say it was leaning slightly more toward Abdul El-Sayed. But this is again, and this has happened a bunch. This happened in Texas with Tal Rico and Jasmine Crockett, where nationally they're super vicious, super pitted against each other. The voters think, look at these two great candidates I've got to choose from, which is sort of how the folks in Michigan were, where they really respect Haley Stevens, but maybe think the people who were pro El-Sayed were much more like, but I think we need someone new. And I think maybe he might, you know, be able to fight Trump better because I agree with him on XYZ. But also there were like, it wasn't totally split. There was like one more person for El-Sayed than there was for Haley Stevens, but it wasn't a foregone conclusion.
Will?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm glad we got a gut check on the Michigan accent. I spent a little bit of time when I was younger in Wisconsin and Michigan. I didn't remember it being kind of like a grizzled prospector accent like this.
To be clear, but I don't think it's just the accent here that's the problem.
It's the Michigan way. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, obviously there have been some questions about, you know, whether is this going to, do people like that she's a bit of a character? It's very possible.
I've met her. I just think like she's a goofball. And can I just, I have, again, because I'm always kicking around pieces. I've got one that I want to do where it's like, what do we mean when we talk about authenticity? Because the fact is she's got a little bit of that like Tracy Flick energy, you know, but like, is that is authentic to her. Like she is a goofy person. That's her personality. And that's coming out. And so I think for people who are seeing not just that clip, but either her in person or lots of other clips of her who are kind of inundated with her, they see a more total picture than the internet does in people who are just national political observers that I think layers up to somebody who like really wants to work hard and is kind of a goofball and is like laughing a lot when she's doing and talking about things. And I think that people like that's as authentic as anything else.
Maybe it all works in the way that who's like the HBO actor, he's famous for the meme where he's wearing the hot dog suit.
Oh, Tim Robinson.
Tim Robinson. That's sort of like cringe comedy, you know, where it's all like very awkward, the comedy of awkwardness. Maybe that works for her in ways that I just don't understand. But it is, she's like the antimatter version of Gavin Newsom. Right. Like somebody who's like so or Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton or Kamala Harris. Right. These people are so polished and charismatic, like in very real ways. I think, you know, if you've ever been in a room with people at that level, you're like, oh, I see why they can get people to vote for them. Right. And Haley Stevens is just like she's just whatever pheromones she's putting out are different than the Kamala Harris, Hillary Clinton pheromones of a politician. That's all. I don't know how else to say it.
Okay, so we talked about Haley Stevens, but let's talk about the rest of it.
That's what I wanted to ask. Talk to me about El Saeed.
Well, actually, I want to talk about the race overall right now. Because now that Plattner's out, I think that Michigan probably becomes the race that we all start watching, right? And we will all watch Maine, but we're going to wait for Troy Jackson to get his footing and understand who he is and how is he different from Plattner and how's that race shaping up. That's all brand new. But this is a well-worn race where now that McMorrow has been out for a little bit, the sides are really like sizing each other up. It's getting very nasty. Lauren Egan has a great piece about the race. But this is going to become the race where if El Sayed wins and loses the general election to the Republican, it will become the talking point against the sort of far left insurgency, the candidates who are running unabashedly pro-Palestine, who are kind of in the Hassan Piker camp, if he loses. If he wins, it will be seen as like the reason why that works now, right? Like the conventional wisdom will be, see how El Sayed won. And in a lot of ways, there will be so many other things in there. Like, what does the environment actually look like on election day? How big is the blue wave? Could anybody win that race? Or actually, was it really tough to win? Would somebody have won by more? But this is going to be, and like Haley Stevens, same thing, right? If she prevails and then wins, there's going to be like, see, this is what you need in these swing states.
Alyssa look at Scott, Haley Stevens and Roy Cooper, right? That's you can right. just run That's boring right. people.
That's right. And so I think for the factional fight that currently exists, which will have enormous implications for what the conventional wisdom is around what Democrats need to win, what kind of candidate needs to emerge for 2028, this race is becoming like very important because it's such a clear breakdown of the two different parts of the faction with two pretty clear standard bearers for their side, kind of like, yeah, like a boring-ish, like, I'm here for the policy, I'm doing the work, but I'm not, you know, I'm not getting involved in all these national things. And then the like much more DSA, much more talking about Israel-Palestine, Medicare for all, you know, that dichotomy, this is going to be the race. How this goes is going to dictate a lot of how we think about 2028.
Will, what do you think of El Sayed, just sort of horse flesh talents as a politician? Because I think he seems pretty impressive along that stuff.
I think so, too. I mean, you know, it struck me, he kind of got on my radar when he did a YouTube workout with Dr. Mike Israetel, who's a famous YouTube workout guy. And I thought, okay, this guy might know what's up. He might know how to reach. He's very popular, by the way, with Sarah's Longwell, the Gen Z guys on her team. And so, you know, I thought, you know, that's a clever way to go with it. You know, I think to Sarah's point, I think we're seeing this kind of growing backlash against DSA after the New York incumbents got knocked off, whether within the Democratic Party, but also I think as a boogeyman for the Trump administration to use. The State Department just put out this crazy article or this report on, you know, DSA is in league with Cuba and all this stuff. So I think that all of that is really going to put a lot more spotlight on this race and really make, I feel like the Democratic establishment has sort of woken up. There's this Atlantic article that's like, we got to take out the DSA from the Democratic Party root and branch and all this stuff. So I think all that energy is going to settle on this race.
But another part of this that's going to be really fascinating to watch is, can you put it back together after the primary, right? Because part of what we're seeing happen in Texas is that Jasmine Crockett has had no interest in helping James Tallarico and as a result, it's kind of hurting him a little bit with Black voters in Texas. It's certainly not helping him, right? Like part of what would be helpful and is always helpful, and I'm just going to go back, a big part of like the thing that I say in the book is that if you want to build a community, you've got to be a community. And this is why primaries can be so difficult. But when they turn into these blood feuds where people are so angry at each other that they won't kind of come back together and try to put the coalition together, that is when Democrats lose. And I think in Michigan, you're seeing this same kind of blood feud taking shape that when it's all said and done, if Haley Stevens wins, does El Sayed do the sort of like non-committal types that many, like partially part of that group, like refused to come out for Kamala Harris? And do they sort of take their ball and go home? and vice versa, right? Do the more moderate folks say, I'm not voting for Al-Sayed. They ran a dirty campaign. You know, like, is it so broken that like there's no way to sort of put this community back together? Because that can undermine. And look, then there's all these like side stories too for this, which is, you know, Hassan Piker right now, who's out there saying Mao Zedong was one of the greatest leaders of all time, despite the fact that he killed, I don't know how many millions of people. And like, does campaigning with somebody like Piker, is it seen as helpful? Does it energize younger voters? Or do people say, this is very extreme, I actually think this is insane? You know, you don't, this is the race where all of that stuff is going to play out, and it's going to be fascinating to watch. Look, I was a McMorrow person. I'll take Stevens if I got to choose, but I'm not sure that I think she's going to win. Like listening to the voters and just listening in general to how much voters are doing kind of like barbaric yawp in their votes instead of saying like, who do I think can win? And like my pragmatism's kicking in, or who do I think is going to work on this or that? They're like, no, I want somebody who's going to annihilate everybody I hate. And I want to send this guy because the establishment hates this guy and I hate the establishment. They've been screwing everything up. You know, like that is, I don't know.
I would just caution people observing this stuff. A lot of times people know what they think, and then they're just hoping for results to support their position on that. I would say one of the things we do here frequently with Bullock is we're not sure like what the right answer is on this. And the elections are going to give us a lot of clarity, right? The elections are going to provide us a bunch of data points to see, well, I don't know, like, does this thing work or does this other thing work better? And so we will see.
You know, just as this really quickly, you did get to miss sort of the Plattner dropout fallout discourse from that.
I wrote a big piece about that.
I know you did. I'm just saying, like, you got to sit it out in real time. But one of the pieces that was going around a ton was Tim's piece, in which he was like laying out a bunch of different kinds of candidates. And his whole point, and it kept getting thrown around, like, see, you endorsed Plattner. The point of that piece was that, hey, we're at this sort of moment of political recalibration where there's all of these new political alliances, new issues, new appetites for younger candidates, different candidates. There's a lot of rage. And his point was, try different things. That was his point. His point was, they're going to have to try all this different stuff. It was not like an endorsement of Plattner. It was an endorsement of a strategy that says, like, see what voters want in different places and see what works. And I thought, like, that was a very good faith piece about sort of figuring out how you take the next step. It's, again, I personally disagreed with the Plattner stuff, but like, I didn't disagree with Tim's piece analyzing like what we do to figure out what the best way is forward.
Well, I'll do the thing now where I just lob a grenade in while we close the door. And I am curious. One of the things I'm curious about is on the question of, say, campaigning with Hassan Piker, which actually was the moment that Al-Sayed's candidacy really took off. It used to be that if somebody was on your side, but they were distasteful for some reason, you might not outright reject them, but you wouldn't campaign with them because that could hurt you more than it could help you.
Yeah.
I wonder if we live in a world now where it's actually the opposite, and campaigning with somebody who has a very niche appeal but is distasteful can help you because they have a real niche that they can deliver, but doesn't actually hurt you because nobody gives a shit anymore. And that, you know, like, well, Donald Trump was having dinner with Nick Fuentes and Kanye, right? And so he was able to add the Groypers to his coalition, and then nobody really cared on the outside. And maybe it turns out that it is smart politicking to campaign with Hassan Piker because there aren't actually a meaningful number of voters on the other side who are going to say, that's disqualifying, I don't like that. Now, I would not be thrilled to live in that world because I feel like these things should matter, but should and deserves got nothing to do with it. And maybe we're going to learn that that world and those old conventions no longer really work, at least in some places at some times. I don't know. We'll all find out. It'll be great.
Oh, wait, we want to talk about this. You're not going to let us have 5 minutes of conversation about
this? I thought I was just going to do my thing where I told people to fight about it in the comments on the way out. But if you'd like, and that you and I could discuss this on The Secret Show on Friday, but if you'd like to have your say right now, Sarah.
Well, I see Will wants to go. And then
sure. I mean, I think you're onto something here, JBL. I mean, I think
maybe I'm just talking.
I think when it comes to figures like Kasan Piker, obviously has a large and engaged audience, but like is not a household name. Like my mom would not know who Kasan Piker is. I think there's this advantage in which, you know, you bring that audience in. The average person, even if you say this guy said Mao is cool or whatever, they're going to say, I don't really know who that is. I wonder if you're taking that out of context. And also, I think there's this built-in assumption now that in this like online media environment, people are just, it's like, yeah, this guy's streaming 8 hours a day. He probably said some crazy stuff. And I think people, as you said, I think in the Trump era, a lot of that gets discounted anyway. It's like really what matters besides beating my enemies.
And I was going to say, JVL, I think part of the phenomenon that you're describing is the way that the attention economy works, which is sort of different from so if you're a guy like El Sayed, who's like kind of getting lost in the shuffle between McMorrow, who was the early kind of star, and you're like, all right, people who won't like this guy won't know who he is. And people who do like him, it will help me like get on the board here. You can see how that's an attention economy play. And that's what a lot of people do these days. And then it can kind of take on a life of its own. Like, I bet now, as we get closer to the election, or certainly in the general, I don't think he'll campaign with Kasan Piker. But in terms of getting someone to pay attention to him at a time when he wasn't, that worked. And it works because people are so polarized that they immediately jump to, well, if Third Way hates him and I hate the establishment in Third Way, I'm going to like him. And vice versa. And like people kind of line up quickly with their sides.
Yeah. My point is just that nobody really understands what the rules are anymore. And so to the extent that these test cases can help us understand what voters think the rules are, that's useful for analyzing things going forward. All right, guys, good show. Long show. Will, thank you for sitting in for Tim. We greatly appreciated it. Sarah, it was good to be with you, my friend. Everybody else, tell me how wrong I am about all the things down in the comments. I always enjoy that. Hit like, hit subscribe, follow the feed. We'll be back soon with more takes about how awesome everything is going in this golden age of America. Good luck, America.